Hello and welcome to It Was Mooney, your source for commentary on all things movie and pop culture related. I'm your host, Kosi, and I am joined always by Wani B. And today's episode was brought to you by Patrick Swayze's Tearaway Pants, because good Lord, just wow.
Thank you, Kosi. So on today's show, it's another trailer trash day. We'll react to the trailers for The Penguin, House of the Dragon Season 2, and the final trailer for Godzilla vs. Kong. And then, of course, we're going to give an in-depth review of Roadhouse, the 1989 version, not the new Amazon Conor McGregor vehicle.
Not this time, Bezos.
And then, yeah, before we get into all of that, though, Kosi, man, you see what happened with that Baltimore bridge?
Come on, man. Can we just leave the city of Baltimore alone? Like,
bro, seriously,
been through enough.
It looked like one of those little toothpick bridges you build in physics class back in high school.
No, legit looked like an action movie. And seriously, honestly, in all seriousness, prayers up for everybody involved. I heard some people.
I think there's at least six people that are presumed dead at this point.
Yeah, so prayers up for their families. I know that, like, I'm not an engineer or a boat engineer, but it didn't look like it should have happened in the first place.
You know, I'm sure there's some engineer, some civil engineer that could come and tell us that they're actually built that way. It, like, has some safety features or something. But seriously, man, it looked like, you know, it looked like some 80s action movie. Dude. Or like one of those Indian Bollywood action movies where it's like corny special effects.
The miniatures, but like,
it took about 3 seconds for the whole thing to collapse. Like a mile plus long bridge to just fall in the water.
It was a very slow type crash. And like, again, I think it was like at nighttime, so you couldn't really see
all that. I was at 1:30 in the morning, so not too many people, fortunately. And they managed to get a message out that there was a problem with the power. And so they kind of closed off the bridge. There wasn't too many cars. Could have been a lot worse, basically.
Yeah, much, much worse.
You know, again, it's a tragedy, obviously. But Jesus Christ, watching that video, it's hard not to be impacted by how fast that bridge fell.
Yeah, I think that, and also what's been kind of disheartening too is like you're seeing, because everyone on the internet. I love the internet because, you know, it brings us together. But the internet also, you know, everyone has a voice. Everyone has an opinion, and like you're seeing like actual engineers, people who like work on boats, arguing with like blue checkmark people saying like, actually I think this was like a psyop to like do XYZ. It's like, hold on, man, like
everything's a conspiracy.
Everything's a psyop, everybody. Even It Was Mooney, even
of course,
this show,
this is actually part of the Israel's plan to take over the world,
and we are so glad you're here.
Or is it Russia? I can't remember who's paying us.
Who knows these days? It depends on who's ever sponsoring
one of these shady folks. Maybe it's the Koreans.
No, obviously it's Patrick Swayze, because, you know, he's always
Patrick Swayze's ghost.
He's always on our minds and in our hearts. But yeah, man, I again, prayers up for Baltimore. But hey, let's get into this, man. Trailer trash day.
Let's start off with The Penguin,
dude.
Honestly, Colin Farrell, you forget it's Colin Farrell. Whoever, the makeup team for, I mean, you did it in the Matt Reeves Batman movie, you had the same effect, but it's really hard to tell it's Colin Farrell. Unless you look real closely, you kind of recognize some of his mannerisms.
He was my favorite part. He was my favorite performance in that movie. Of a lot of great performances, but Paul Dano did a great job, but Colin Farrell, I think, was the mixture of the makeup, and just Colin Farrell's just an amazing actor. So I just loved
his portrayal. He hits it out the park every time.
Yeah, so like he became Oswald Cobblepot. So like seeing how he ended up at the end of the Batman, which was, geez, 3 years ago now, and so like him getting his own show, like I know when it got announced, like, you know, like with streaming, when a show gets announced, everybody's like, oh, why are we doing this? But I don't know, man.
It kind of looks nice. It looks like kind of a pulpy Sopranos kind of vibe.
Godfather vibes I got,
Sopranos,
too.
Godfather. Yeah. A little more grimy than Godfather.
Yeah, man.
A little more pulpy. It's the same kind of aesthetic from the Batman movie where everything's dark.
And like
everything's
a real
kind of grim looking.
Shade of orange, yeah.
Yeah, kind of shade of brown or orange. I'm excited for it. The Matt Reeves Batman movie was pretty fun. Been better Batman movies, but it was a good movie, and I think this Penguin show has a good chance to hopefully win back some superhero. Well, not barely even a superhero show at this point.
It's really presenting itself as a crime thriller, like a violent
kind of a
crime thriller.
Crime thriller that's just happens to be focused on a character from superhero properties, but not a superhero himself. So hopefully they kind of keep it a little more grounded, a little more interesting.
I think going off of that, keeping the whole keeping it grounded and interesting thing, again, going, that's what Matt Reeves' whole MO was for the Batman, definitely their MO, going to this one. Lauren LaFranc is the showrunner for this, so I'm not seeing a lot of the work that she's done. Only thing that's coming up is a science fiction TV series, Impulse. I'm not really familiar with that, but again, coming off of just what Matt Reeves did with the Batman, just this cast, like Colin Farrell, Kristen Milioti. You guys remember Chris Milani from remember that the Black Mirror episode where they were at Star Trek'd out?
Yeah, I think she did How I Met
Your
Mother.
She's
too.
Your mother in How I Met Your
Mother.
Yeah,
she's the mother as well, right?
Fantastic actress. Clancy Brown, Mr. Krabs is in this. Michael Ziegen, Michael Kelly, a huge cast. Carmen Ejogo, Francis Chow, Jaron Abramson, Theo Rossi's in this. Scott Cohen. Again, the list goes on. They're really, really trying to bring together a great cast list for such a big show that's going to lead into the Batman 2, I'm assuming, because this takes place 1 week after the events of the first Batman.
I don't think the trailer was too clear what the topic of the show is going to be.
Well, yeah, it's going by just what I'm like seeing here, like online, what it's about.
It's still early on, but we can expect an interesting crime thriller there.
Yeah, man.
Then moving on, House of the Dragon Season 2.
Yes, Lord, man.
Now, they have two trailers for this, a black and a green trailer. Basically, one showing kind of Rhaenyra's side versus Alicent's side. That's kind of the big split in the show, the civil war between the two factions. Both trailers look pretty great. Lots of dragons, lots of political intrigue. This show is doing a great job so far of kind of reminding us of what we liked about Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Most definitely. You know, this time, neither of us have read the book, so we don't know how it's going to finish. It's still a surprise for both of us how things are going to go. But it is fully written now. There is a path there. Hopefully, we don't have some of the issues we had with late Game of Thrones season 7 and 8.
Yeah, I think what's so amazing about House of the Dragon, because really, I'm a person that, you know, I didn't hate how Game of Thrones like ended. I didn't hate it. Definitely saw the issues, but you know, coming off of that, House of the Dragon had such an uphill battle to climb because of just how the series Game of Thrones ended, you know, and now you're essentially a spinoff series trying to win that goodwill. And so it had a real uphill battle, and to House of Dragons benefit, it knocked it out the park so well in season one. It really felt like we returned to that feel. We weren't in we're still in Westeros, but it was way before it was able to be its own thing. And I love that how that's carried over to season two, because now just the factions. Again, it reminds me of just old Game of Thrones, how it's been. So I'm loving this.
What make Game of Thrones great? Yeah, obviously the Night Walkers, the dragons, all these things. What made Game of Thrones great was the interpersonal relationships. The drama, the people vying for power, all these different characters. That, you know, you grew fond of. Some of them were terrible people. Some of them you knew were assholes. You knew you should root against.
I think we came. I think we were drawn in by the blood and the booze, but we stayed for the political intrigue and just backbiting that was on the show. And that's what I loved about it. And that's what I love about House of the Dragon.
It's some wonderful characters and unique characters. And House of the Dragon kind of does the same thing. You really get into the conflict between the two female leads.
Emma Darcy. Like, seriously, like Emma Darcy and Olivia Cooke playing Rhaenyra and Allison, respectively. Just fantastic actresses. I just love it. Matt Smith, former doctor.
Matt Smith, he does a great job. Former doctor.
Doctor Who, not a...
Again,
doctor,
he...
He's real
like
doctor.
Unequivocally a piece of shit for most of the show. But you end up kind of rooting for him because he just kind of has the swagger, this kind of...
You love to hate him. That's what it is about Damon. He's not the best guy, but he definitely has charisma. Definitely is.
You want to see what happens next.
Exactly. You can't take your eyes off of him.
That's exactly what it is. Magnetic. You might hate the character. You might like it, but you want to see what happens next. It's an interesting character. It's an interesting show, and it looks like there's going to be a lot of dragons.
A lot of drag. A lot of fighting. A lot of just like, again, revenge is what I'm seeing. Just going by the black trailer from Rhaenyra's side, because you know. She's coming off of for all you people that haven't seen House of the Dragon, Rhaenyra is coming off of losing one of her own children. It was very tragic. And at the end, we see that close-up image of her face, just seeing like, all right, now we're about to, it's about to go down. So I love how we're seeing the after, like what's happening with that. Again, I haven't read the books, but I'm assuming she's not going to take that lightly at all. So.
One last thing as well, probably one of my only criticism about season one is that there was so many time jumps and so many actor changes that it was hard to keep track of who was who.
A little confusing.
You know, from almost one episode to the next, you'd have multiple, if not decades, happen. Now this show looks like it's going to be a little more focused. Yeah. The war, it's going to be a certain time frame. All the actors are going to be. We're not going to get old versions of these characters.
Right.
So it should be a little bit easier to follow. You could get a little lost some of the early episodes of season one.
So you team green or team black one?
Man, I think I have to be Team Black. I mean, the show kind of sets you up to make you think that Team Black is the right team. But I feel for Team Green because Alicent, one, she was put in this awful position.
Her dad, bro. She's a teen bride pimped out by her dad.
Basically, her dad pimped her out for power. And then, you know, she misinterprets her husband's dying message. But it's not like a wild misinterpretation. It's not like she's willfully misinterpreting. Just from what he said, it would make sense.
I think she takes it and runs with it a little too much, but yeah, definitely could have been interpreted in different ways.
Again,
definitely.
She, you know, it was clear, and Game of Thrones was clear about this too, that final words are often delirious outbursts thrown out by dying men and women.
In Viserys' case, this was clearly
a delirious man just throwing out words. And unfortunately, Allison happened to be caught there. It's a tragedy. It's a great show, but it's a tragedy that they have to be fighting. Kind of goes into the horrors of war and the futility of it, that people who should be friends, who should be fighting together for the good of the realm, are instead massacring each other for, you know, basically a stone chair at the end of the day.
Right? Yeah. No, you're right about that, dude.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited, man. But
yeah. Okay, so final trailer for us today, Godzilla versus Kong.
Oh yeah.
Was it Final Empire?
The New Empire one.
New Empire. Okay, no, so
nothing final, bro.
I mean, you know, if you're going into a Godzilla versus Kong movie, you kind of know what you're getting, right? You're not expecting some...
This isn't Minus One where we're going for an Oscar here. This is the Saturday morning cartoon version of...
This is Saturday morning. This is something Michael Bay would have made. Very Michael Bay inspired.
Oh my God.
Basically, we got like a red Kong. That's the bad guy.
Yeah, the Scar King. Yeah, he seems to be the...
Then we got a blue-eyes white Godzilla as...
Whatever the hell that was. It looked cool though.
It looked cool. It just looked like a blue-eyes white dragon.
I think... I can't see that now.
Yeah. No, so again, you know, these movies have never been known for their interesting human characters or their intricate plotting, their interesting treatises on the human condition. No, man, we're going in there to watch big-ass monkey fight a big-ass lizard.
Dude, a big-ass monkey with a Nintendo Power Glove.
He has his big-ass Power Glove now. I don't know where he got that from, but it looks awesome.
Don't worry about it.
He can punch so hard. Punch anything. Godzilla has, like, purple beams now.
No, it's pink.
Pink, purple, magenta. We'll call it magenta.
Dude, it's the worst baby reveal, gender reveal of all time with this one, and I'm all for this version.
It's magenta Godzilla. It looks like some kind of power-up, and it's going to be against blue-eyes white Godzilla. Listen, man, it's like when you see those 80s movies where the evil twin has a mustache.
It's that, and it also reminds me of the old, like, old-school four-way, like, tag team matches where you have Godzilla and Nintendo Power Glove Kong on one side, and Shimu, by the way, that's the name of the blue-eyes-looking one, and Scar King on the other side, and they all just converge, and it's like someone is playing with a bunch of their monster toys, and we get to all come watch and check it out. And this trailer really did get on that.
Directors know that we're all here for the action figures and not here for the little piddly humans.
Yeah, no, from early reviews, because the embargo lifted about a couple days ago, and from what I'm seeing, everyone's saying that, yeah, like, the story's a little bit kind of light, but what you're there for, you get it in spades, which is monster action and set pieces, which I love. Like, I never really cared for the humans in these movies. I really cared a lot more for the monsters, and they're really, really going to give us what we're looking for in this one. So I'm really excited.
If you want a monster movie with a good human element, this ain't it. If you just want to see a big ass lizard and a big ass monkey fight another big ass lizard and another big ass monkey, I think this is the movie for you. And you can catch the review here next week on It Was Mooney.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk about that. Yeah, man.
And then today, we're going to review movie Roadhouse. Not the new Amazon version that came out.
Is it that one?
With Conor McGregor. I heard that's actually pretty good.
Dude, Conor is awesome in that because I took a look at that. I kind of wanted to do that today, but no, like I definitely wanted
to. No, folks, we're shouting out the Sways today.
We're taking it back. Yes.
Listen. Guys, Roadhouse, in a one sense, it's a timeless classic. In another sense, it's a bad movie.
It is not a great movie, Juan. I'll say that much.
It's 80s trash. If you've ever watched Scarface, honestly, you kind of get the same vibe. It's a classic. It's an American classic. You really should watch it at least once. But if you're going and expecting something like Godfather, expecting something high cinema, no, listen, y'all, this is the Godzilla versus Kong of the 80s, right?
Yes, this is the matchup.
Trash entertainment. Patrick Swayze sells it, though. I mean, he is just fun. Cozy, why don't you go into some of these?
Just going off of that, just with Roadhouse, it's a movie that's really, really light on plot. Patrick Swayze is the best cooler in the game. For those of you who don't know, a cooler is basically somebody who works. He's a professional bouncer. He is a bouncer's bouncer. He watches over all the bouncers. So Patrick Swayze's character is the best one, and he just goes around just cleaning up bars, and that's it. And he's called to one really, really rough bar in Missouri called the Double Deuce, and that's where he meets his match in just a crazy business tycoon guy that's out to ruin his life. But Swayze in those pleated pants does not quit. Like, Juan, Swayze legit goes on like an hour long just ass kicking tear. Like, everywhere he goes, like, everyone, like you're getting messed up. You're getting messed up. You're getting messed up. Like you're going to get a roundhouse kick. Like, I love it. And it's so late 80s cheese. There's a lot of shirtless Tai Chi done by Patrick Swayze.
Patrick Swayze is shirtless for a good 50% of the movie. Unnecessarily. He'll just get into bar fights and then his shirt comes off.
They have something for it. Like, I think a lot of the times where, because they do a lot of, not a lot of expositions in this movie. There's just a lot of like, his name is Dalton. So Patrick Swayze's character is Dalton. He's the badass character. There's never like a, oh, see the guy over there? He did this. No, it's just a little bit of a, I heard one time he ripped someone's throat out. I heard one time he
beat literally this one guy up. Patrick Swayze's character feels bad and is haunted by the fact that he ripped somebody's throat out in a bar fight. Yes, this happens during the movie. He rips out a guy's throat again.
Sometimes you gotta just rip out a throat, I guess. But I think it's a testament to Patrick Swayze's work. Swayze, Sam Elliott, who's in this, who plays Swayze's mentor, and Rowdy Harrington.
I want to take a second though, because
go on.
Sam Elliott. All right, most of us are used to Sam Elliott being, you know, the old wise guy in movies. He was in Golden Compass, Parks and Rec,
kind of
like Ghost Rider, like, you know, kind of wizened, great character, spilling out wisdom for that great voice. No, listen, Matt, in Roadhouse, dude looks like a lion. He's like 50 years old. Listen, I'm straight as they come. But Jesus Christ, this guy could probably steal my wife out from under me.
He looked great. He almost stole Kelly Lynch off his hands.
It's unbelievable. You know, he's a fun character as well. I also love, you know, the sleazy bar owner. You think he's going to be the bad guy? He looks like a 70s porn director.
I'm talking about Ben Gazzara.
No, not Ben Gazzara. That's the bad guy, the bar owner.
Oh, the bar owner? Oh, man. Kevin Tighe is his name.
Yeah, no, this dude looks legitimately like biggest creeper from a 70s porn set. And somehow he never ends up being the bad guy. He actually ends up shooting the bad guy in the stomach at some point.
He hires Patrick Swayze's Dalton to come and clean up his bar. Like, he's trying to make some money, and all this roughhousing is messing with his money, so he knows Swayze's the best. And, like, so there's a scene in Roadhouse where, because the Double Deuce is in such dire straits. So Kevin Tighe is the actor's name. He plays Frank. He's the owner of Double Deuce. He's walking through, making sure everything's good. And on the wall, and on the wall, there's like, there's basically a phrase that says, "For a good fuck, call 1-800-da-da-da-da." And what he does is he goes and like takes out a Sharpie and makes the F into a B and puts a I in between the U and the CK and says, "Hey, reads for a good Buick." And he like, it's a little moment, right? Then he just kind of does a little smirk and like walks away. But like that kind of mentality kind of like almost encompasses the movie. It's like irreverent, very, very, very dirty, but also just like it's fun. Roadhouse is a fun movie that has just outrageous moments. And as we're going through the highlights, and that's
we haven't mentioned our favorite line yet, where he's fighting. So the bad guy's this big business tycoon trying to take over the bar and the town and such. And he hires basically an evil version of Patrick Swayze.
Evil Swayze.
To also go shirtless immediately in a fight. And just to basically kick Swayze's ass, right?
Everyone has an evil analog in this movie.
Right, everyone. And so he comes in. He's kind of giving Swayze the business, giving him a hard time. Swayze's having a hard time. He's whooping him. So having a hard time with it. This is after Garrett Wilson.
Oh,
Sam Elliott's character, his dad, has been murdered on the show. And so the bad guy has Swayze in a headlock, and he says, "I used to fuck guys like you in prison."
Yeah, for intimidation.
Just that kind of energy of the movie. I mean, it's a movie where Patrick Swayze is famous for being a bouncer. Like, literally, people are like, "Oh, my God, it's Patrick Swayze. It's the bouncer."
Ghost, guys. The dude from Ghost.
The dude from Ghost.
Dirty Dancing.
And Dirty Dancing, the guy that was dating a 13-year-old. This dude.
Oh, my God, you're right.
Like, people act. Everybody calls him out that he's all, like, this skinny, city-looking boy. But, you know, apparently he's that famous just for being a bouncer. It's that kind of movie where it somehow makes sense that anybody on earth would be famous for being a bouncer.
No, well to Swayze's credit, though, he really sold it, though. He wasn't the best martial artist. He wasn't a fighter, but I think Swayze had the charisma, definitely had the looks. He had it all, like, to be that leading man, but again,
and he
like,
ripped the man's throat out, Cozy.
He ripped him. Look, hey, Juan, like, he warned him again, "I'll rip out your throat," but he wasn't listening. But no, like Roadhouse is a timeless classic. 89, dude, it came out the same, came out a month before Batman 89, came out the same year as Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. Like, that was a packed year for, like, Back to the Future Part 2 also came out in that span, and then we have
Roadhouse. I want to be clear about this, folks. The fact that we're naming all these movies together, you know, Roadhouse is probably not at the quality of some of these other movies.
Now you think? But looking back at Roadhouse, like, you know, it was made for a measly $15 million, you know, in the back roads, but, you know, made like $60 million worldwide. It had its audience. It definitely was a movie that understood what it was. Kick ass soundtrack. If you like country, if you like music, if you like the music of people that like go and set up in bars to play, that's basically what I can describe it as. It's great. I love it. There's this blind musician who is like Patrick Swayze's friend in the movie. It's great. I love the music, but it's a crazy, crazy action movie that I love. And it makes sense why, you know, they'd want to remake this and, you know, have it for a new audience. We got, what, Jake
Gyllenhaal.
They're
remaking everything nowadays, man. What are we on, the fifth Ghostbusters movie?
Dude, don't get me started. I mean, yeah, we're on the fifth one. I saw the new Amazon Roadhouse. I enjoyed it. I don't think it's – I didn't want to compare it to the 89 version because the 89 version wasn't even like it, – it's different. Like, this new one's different.
It'd be hard to
take.
Make the 89 version today as a serious movie.
It's not meant to be serious. But, no, like, I give Jake Gyllenhaal props, gigantic props to Conor McGregor in this new one. He's an absolute delight. He's just a crazy villain guy is the best way I can describe him. But, yeah, it's definitely a piece of nostalgia watching – Roadhouse and just watching just what was politically correct back then, like, you know, like what was acceptable. And
times
just,
have changed, y'all. Times have changed very highly.
Yeah, like 35 years ago, and like just seeing the progression of just where we're at now, I just loved it.
And then, of course, RIP to Patrick Swayze. Untimely death, of course.
Of course. He's given us, dude, his, just hold on, I think just looking at Swayze's filmography, like we know him for Ghost, but this guy has been acting since the late 70s, and I think his first big break was The Outsiders. I don't know if you've seen The Outsiders.
I don't think I have.
It's a really popular film. It starred a lot of these like up and coming actors, like Rob Lowe was in it, Emilio Estevez was in it, Matt Dillon, Tom Cruise was in it, like Ralph Macchio was in it. Again, like a lot of up and coming stars, but Swayze was in that, and that was like one of his like first big ones. Then there was Red Dawn, Dirty Dancing. Again, like he's had such an illustrious career, and it's one that we, you know, everyone has their favorite Swayze moment, their favorite Swayze movie. This one's mine. This is what I think of whenever I think of Patrick Swayze.
I think mine might be Ghost.
Ghost. Like, as a kid, I watched Ghost, and I watched stuff like Dirty Dancing before, like, as a kid. So when I first saw Roadhouse in high school, I was like, okay, this Patrick Swayze with the froofy hair. Okay, dude, it was such a cool moment just to see.
He sells it.
Yeah, he sells it. Like, he really does.
Good movie. I'll recommend watching it.
Yeah, guys, highly recommend watching Roadhouse 89 and Roadhouse 2024. Just if you want to get like a different flavor, you can find Roadhouse 2024 on Amazon and Roadhouse 89 on HBO Max if you're subscribed to either one of those. But yeah.
Okay, and then for this week's plug of the week.
Plug of the week. What you got for me, Juan?
So this week I'm going to be plugging a video game, God of War, the Valhalla DLC.
Okay, cool.
Basically, the God of War games have been around, you know, going on 20 years now almost, since the PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 3 days. Great, fun games. You know, you're a Greek god, at first bent on revenge and destruction, and now you're kind of an older, wizened Greek god who's trying to protect his kid from the new forces of evil. It's a lot of fun. If you're into the game, this is basically DLC added a roguelike element where you can kind of fight.
What does that mean, the roguelike element?
Basically, you fight repeated, procedurally generated enemies. You kind of do runs, right? So you kind of play until you lose, and then you restart with kind of the same item or new items, new strategies.
Okay.
The enemies aren't all in the same place. The maps aren't all the same. It's kind of a way to get you to do repeat runs and kind of vary the same content up.
Okay. Yeah, I love the gameplay. I'm in between so many video games, but the gameplay of that new one is so fun.
And then the Valhalla DLC does a good job of kind of being a therapy session for Kratos. You know, he's literally, his backstory is that he destroyed all of Greece in his murderous rampage trying to get revenge. So, you know, the fact that he's kind of like a father now, he's been married, kind of found happiness, trying to come to peace with the horrible things he did. Very interesting. You know, God of War really started as a series of kind of extreme macho, you know, like rah-rah, like, you know,
rip
be as macho
off, yeah.
as and ridiculously gory and over the top as possible. And now the series is kind of taking a look to kind of analyze that. It's like, okay, you know, the things we found fun when we were 12, when we were younger, you know, there was a lot of destruction. It's kind of taking a more mature, more serious look at some of the stuff that goes on in the game. It's a great game. It does a good job of being fun and giving you an interesting story and interesting characters to latch onto. Hopefully the show that's coming out, I think on Amazon.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that's one of those things where just, it's like that one, The Last of Us, Red Dead Redemption. Those are video games that like
they already have a full built-in narrative.
Yeah, it's built for
interesting characters. You know, a lot of the game is basically like a movie. It's very cinematic. So hopefully they do a good job of bringing it to the big screen. What about you, Cozy? What's your plug of the week?
My plug of the week is actually a movie. So it's a movie called Sting. It's actually an Australian-made movie. By Kia Roche Turner. It's a movie about a little girl who befriends a alien spider, and that spider begins to stalk and eat her friends and family. It's one of those movies that, you know, it's a small independently made horror movie that I hope gets big or or just a much larger recognition in the future. It comes out April 12th, but I was able to see it early. And part of my plug is not only the Sting movie, which I loved a lot. It's a definitely feels like a throwback to like Arachnophobia and like those like old like B creature feature movies. It definitely felt like a throwback. A lot of practical effects, which I enjoyed, but definitely married with the CGI and like the spider's creepy. I'm not scared of insects, but that the spider's like the size of like a little mini like dog. It gets big, and like a spider that big running around, it looks scary. And definitely when it's all practical was a really great touch. But I was able to see this movie because there are theaters like AMC and Cinemark and Regal, which I go to. I more so go to AMC, but I know Cinemark and Regal do this too. They offer AMC does a thing called it's called Screen Unseen. It's where, you know, they show you like, hey, a movie's gonna be playing today at whatever time. We won't tell you what it is, but just show up and watch it. And Sting was one of those.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I'm subscribed to this thing called GoFobo, which lets you watch early movies. And I remember them doing something like this. So I like seeing it go and being expanded out to, you know, more like mainstream theaters. So yeah, Sting was a great time. Sting comes out April 12th. It's a fantastic creature feature. I loved it. And I definitely want to, again, just give a huge shout out to AMC, Regal, and Cinemark just for doing different things like that, like the mystery movie stuff and Screen Unseen to get more people into the theaters. The more people in the theaters, the better the industry does. And, you know, I just love that they're, you know, trying to do these out of the box ideas to garner more support in theaters. So yeah, I definitely loved it.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. This definitely seems like something that's aimed at cinephiles. You know, just an interesting way to catch a movie you probably wouldn't have checked out on your own.
Most definitely.
It's good marketing both ways, right? You get to go see AMC, get to have kind of an interesting experience, not your standard movie experience.
Yeah.
These movies get exposure, and they get seen by a little bit of a wider audience that probably wouldn't have thought to give them a chance in the first place.
Yeah, and that's why I love that stuff, too. That's why I loved AMC A-List. Like, you know, you're able to see three movies. One of those movies might be something that you might not have seen, but
that's
you have
a good that's opportunity. That's another good plug of the week, AMC A-List.
Shout out to A-List, AMC.
Basically took over what MoviePass did and did it right.
Look, MoviePass, yeah, that's a great way to put it. MoviePass was onto something, but they didn't really have that.
MoviePass was somehow the first case of Wall Street investors scamming themselves for the average man. It was glorious. They basically took Wall Street investor money and just gave it out for free to customers. It was a fun time. It was never going to last, but thankfully gave the industry an idea of how they could come up with, you know, consistent revenue while giving us options. You know, going and paying $15 to watch a single movie is it's outrageous these days.
The whole idea of having a subscription-based movie service where, you know, let's take that price you spend for every time you go to the theaters and kind of compound that into a one low price, which MoviePass had it, but like, yeah, they were being backed by hilarious means.
Yeah, they were being propped up by candy canes and roses. Rainbows and fairies. It's all make-believe.
Yeah, dark times. But hey, I'm glad we have some stuff like AMC. But yeah, but I guess with that is our show for this week, guys. I want to thank you guys just for stopping in and chatting with us. Again, if you like what you heard, you can like and subscribe to us on Spotify and just search for It Was Mooney on Spotify. You can find us there in all our episodes, and it'll take you right there to us. But yeah, until next time, guys, I'm Kosi, and I've been joined again by Wani B. Until next time, guys, adios.
Adios.
Peace out, guys.